I learned how to troll from being trolled.
Hey everybody, this is Mike. You may know me as Big Red Machine on Reddit, and you're listening to the first episode of the Monero Monitor podcast. We've got a great interview lined up for you all today, and it is my great pleasure to speak with Ricardo Fluffy Pony Spagni, core team member of the Monero project. How's it going, Ricardo?
Hello. Not too bad. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on, and thanks for kind of being the guinea pig of the show, too, since this is the first episode. You know, I'm especially...
Or the guinea pony.
yeah, there you go, the guinea pony. I know, I'm especially excited because I feel like I've talked to you a number of times on IRC or Reddit or whatever, but this is the first chance I've gotten to speak with you in person. So thanks for kind of giving me that honor there.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, if you don't mind, since this is the first show, before you and I kind of get started, I just wanted to take, I don't know, 20 seconds and relay to any listeners that we may or may not get sort of the idea behind this show. So, you know, over the past months or a couple years, you've obviously appeared on a number of Bitcoin-related podcasts, and I know you even had the Monero missive for a little while, although I get the feeling that was probably a bit of a burden for you after a while.
Yeah, it became a bit of a chore.
Yeah. You know, I thought it'd be cool if somebody outside of maybe that core team started a show where we could have some of the same types of things that the Bitcoin podcast do. So feature people, feature projects, but instead of focusing on Bitcoin, we could maybe do that with Monero. So bring in, you know, guests who might be involved in core development, but also have their own startups.
Yeah.
Or, you know, their own interests. And then maybe occasionally we'll venture into the Bitcoin space or some of the other altcoins or something like that. But the core focus then being primarily on what else is going on around Monero.
Cool.
So I guess, you know, everything that has been about Monero up until now has featured you. How did you become that kind of de facto spokesman for Monero?
That's a good question. I actually have no idea.
Fair enough.
I guess, you know, like especially at the beginning and even now to a large degree, Monero is a pro-privacy project, which, I mean, you know, for some people, it can be pretty nerve-wracking to be involved in a pro-privacy project under your real identity. To some degree, you make yourself a target. Or at least you make yourself I'm hesitant to say a person of interest, I guess more an interesting person to certain groups of people. At the same time, I don't think that a pro-privacy project can exist without somebody or multiple people standing up and saying, you know, this is who I am in real life and this is what I'm doing. So it kind of had to be done, and I'm very proud to say that I'm not the only one that, you know, like you, for example, and are doing this, that there are community members that are going to speak at meetups, and contributors who work on Monero who are going to talk at meetups. So we're starting to see, slowly a portion of the community come out front and center. Which is kind of exciting, so that it's not just me.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's certainly something that I kind of went back and forth on for a while. Do I want to put my name behind the show or do I want to try and keep some veil of privacy? I mean, I think ultimately, as somebody who really just wants to talk with people about why they're in this, maybe it lends a little bit that I am somebody who isn't trying to hide who I am. I don't know. I guess I'll find out in a couple years, yeah.
If you find yourself having to move to South Africa for any reason, just let me know.
All right. Well, I actually, you know, I one of my really good friends used to live in South Africa and only said good things. So, you know, I've already.
Oh, there we go.
And actually, so that was a number of years ago. And I have to say, it is far easier to Skype from the U.S. to South Africa than it ever used to be. So
that's very true.
I kind of want to get into how you got into Bitcoin. Some of the things that you've been involved in. I know you were on the Bitcoin game or the Bitcoin show, whatever that podcast was, where you talked a little bit about this. But maybe you could just give us 30 seconds, quick brief of, you know, why when you first heard of Bitcoin, was it something that interested you, and not just something that you kind of dismissed like maybe many people did?
So, I mean, I first really started to dabble with Bitcoin in early 2011, and a lot of the stuff initially that appealed to me was not so much the monetary aspect of it, but the distributed consensus stuff, because I hadn't previously thought that to be possible, and the fact that there was something that worked that did it was kind of exciting. And one of the earliest things that I remember, like really throughout the course of 2011, was figuring out how and why the consensus system worked, and you know, the fact that it basically was held together by string, duct tape, and incentives, and sort of like learning that, and then realizing that you can overcome you can overcome attacks and challenges with an incentive, a very clever use of incentives, was really surprising to me. It was like it wasn't something I'd thought about in that frame or in that way. I'd sort of thought about it more as like, you know, oh, you know, the only way to do this is by making a tax expensive and cryptography. And now suddenly it was like, oh, well, maybe we can sort of incentivize some degree of rational behavior. And that just like blew my early 2011 interest in Bitcoin mind. And I did, you know, I did the usual stuff. I mean, my initial sort of thing was like, oh, mining. Oh, look at this. This is so cool. Oh, mining. I needed to figure out a way to do mining, 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 mining. Which is not, you know, it's not a not an unusual approach. A lot of people think initially that mining is really interesting. And then over time got more involved in other things and in other challenging and interesting areas. And basically, I mean, I'd always sort of been aware of altcoins and always like dabbled in altcoins, but honestly, like until Monero came along, they were just like an interesting detraction or an interesting toy. And then even Monero at the beginning was just an interesting toy until it became something a little bit more interesting, a little bit more serious.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I've heard you describe yourself in the past as at least mostly still a Bitcoin maximalist. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know that's sort of how
No,
I
that's true.
personally feel. You know, I think Monero is a cool project. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. But you know, just the market penetration of Bitcoin and as something that is a completely open ledger, it has certain benefits for certain applications that maybe Monero doesn't have. So, yeah. Okay. So that's
But
cool. Yeah. I
it's
kind of
very
had
true.
a
I mean,
go ahead.
oh no, I was going to say that like as much as I love Monero, and obviously like I'm working on it for a reason, I think it's also prudent to understand that Bitcoin has gone places that Monero is just never going to go, or not, it won't be able to go easily.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think I kind of followed a little bit of that same path as you. I think you're right. A lot of people do. The hearing about things, saying this is interesting, reading about it, and then saying, oh, I'm gonna try and mine. You know, it took me probably a year. I didn't hear about Bitcoin, or at least really take it seriously until 2014 when I sort of stumbled on it on accident. And started reading more about it, and tried to mine various altcoins, and it just became like this incredibly annoying game of chasing what's the next big thing, when in fact really none of them were the next big thing. Bitcoin still sort of
And
is the next big thing.
to make it worse, I mean, like you were battling what were effectively market manipulators and large scale miners and you know, people with more time, money, and energy on their hands than you or I have.
Right. Yeah. And any time that you would catch a wave at the right time was really just luck and not really knowing what you were doing. So, or at least for me. Okay. So what was your kind of first attempt at like a Bitcoin company? I know you have a number of businesses you're running now. But what first was your thing that you did?
So I mean, like initially the sort of very early stuff that I did was I helped people get set up with accepting Bitcoin in e-commerce stores. So I did a lot of like just because by virtue of the business that my wife and I had started, which was an import export business, I was exposed to a lot of e-commerce stuff like WP e-commerce and OpenCart and a bunch of other things. And so I spent a lot of time coding up ways of accepting Bitcoin in, OpenCart or in WP e-commerce or whatever, and then assisting people with implementing this in their e-commerce system. And it was really like, I mean, this was sort of like, forget about any of the ways that we do it now with BitPay or anything like that. This was like, you run an actual wallet on your server,
Yeah.
and then you're accepting funds into there, and then you have this thing that sweeps it out from there into like your cold wallet because, oh, heaven forbid you leave it there. And then like then helping people understand how they can go and trade that and all of that. And so I did that like, I mean, initially I did it just for fun, like to help people. People posted stuff on forums and said, "Oh, I'm trying to accept Bitcoin in my store." Then I would help them. And then later on, it became a little bit more serious, and because some people offered to pay me, and I didn't need the money, but I also realized that if I kept helping people for free, that would be like largely pointless. So I didn't say no to the money either. And that was sort of, I think that consultancy, for want of a better term, was probably the first, or definitely the first Bitcoin business that I ran, where it was, well, I mean, it was just me and I was just having fun. And I was supposed to be like spending less time on work, but this was fun work. So it was, it was great.
Sure. So I know you have something in private beta right now called Payby, but that's not actually your first payment processor that you've worked on. So it sounds like what you were doing before, I guess maybe is that part of what motivated you to then kind of start working on how do we provide a better solution where people don't need to run their own wallets and some type of payment processor like BitPay, but that can accept other things?
Yeah, so initially I rejected the whole BitPay model. I was like, oh, nothing must be centralized. Everything must be decentralized. Centralized things are a scam.
Right.
Now that we've managed to decentralize one thing, surely we can decentralize everything.
All the things.
And yeah, I mean, like I grew up from that and realized that that actually wasn't a feasible approach to life. But I very quickly realized that there was not very quickly, I mean like over time, I started to realize that altcoins in particular weren't going away. And the thing that really solidified it for me was I started up a company called OpenRigs. And OpenRigs manufactured custom mining frames or custom frames for mining computers. It pretty much anyone who was doing GPU mining or running large amounts of GPUs. So there were guys buying it for cracking password hashes. There were some guys doing 3D rendering that bought frames from us. But by
Interesting.
and large, I would say probably like 90% of the people purchasing from us were altcoiners. They were altcoiners that were GPU mining.
I think that that's actually when I first remember hearing your name. I was looking into whether I wanted to build my own GPU mining rig and started looking at, okay, what would I need to do in order to set this up? And I remember stumbling on OpenRigs. So whether I connected that with you and whether that stuck around, I have no idea. But yeah, I remember this project. Is it still going on?
So it went on for quite some time. One of the things that, or the two challenges that we faced was that shipping from South Africa was just ludicrous. It was cheap and really, really slow, or it was expensive and really, really fast. And there was like very little in between. Eventually, we ended up with, we created a design for rack mounted ASICs. Rack mounting like is kind of a bit of a different beast. There's a lot more precision involved because you've got to, the entire structure needs to be like millimeter precise because you're mounting it in a rack, and if those rails don't line up, well, you've got a problem. But it was still the advantage of being flat packed was still huge. And we ended up with one client well, I mean, like during this process of designing it and fiddling around with it, we found one client who was really interested in testing it. And so we sent them a couple of units for their miners, and they were like super excited and came back to us and said, okay, so like how many do we need to order from you in order for you not to sell this to like anyone else? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like 10. I don't know. I hadn't really thought about that. So we ended up cutting a deal. The manufacturing from our perspective doesn't really impact on anything because we have the jig set up, it's manufactured in a workshop that I own that does a bunch of other stuff as well. So whether we produce one unit in a month or 1,000 units in a month or no units makes no difference because that workshop's producing other stuff anyway. So they I wasn't I wasn't unhappy signing an agreement with them, and like that agreement's still ongoing, and they've renewed it several times, and we pretty much only provide those to them. I see that, I mean, a couple of our distributors in Europe and the US still have some stock that I occasionally see popping up online, but I mean, beyond that, the business doesn't, we don't really manufacture GPU frames anymore, and we don't really sell to the public anymore. So we have like one client, and like that's the only client we service. But the thing that really like that happened during the process of like selling GPU rigs to altcoiners or GPU frames, was that altcoiners wanted to pay in whatever coin they were currently mining, because that made the most sense to them, or like the coin they mined last week or whatever.
And it
And I was like, no.
didn't matter to them if you were just turning around and selling it for Bitcoin or for whatever. In their mind, they were
Yeah,
paying with that altcoin.
exactly. There's no vested interest in let's make this coin succeed. There is literally just, hey, so I've mined a bunch of Prime coin. Can I pay you in Prime coin? And I'm like, no. Yeah, but like add 5% of top. No. Oh, but come on, no. And this is like before Shapeshift. So, it was like they had to actually go into Kryptii and change it into Bitcoin and then withdraw the Bitcoin from Kryptii, which of course was always touch and go. And then it was like, but it just sort of like crystallized in my mind the need for a service that could accept or ingest pretty much anything, and spit out Bitcoin, Monero, fiat, whatever.
So then I guess that's kind of where Payby came in. But Payby is actually like an evolution of VertPay, right? Do I have that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So Vertcoin was one of the coins that I tried mining early on. I sort of liked its idea of always staying ASIC free and always, they were trying to implement, I think, some type of private transaction or something. But I remember that there was a huge, I don't know, backlash or something to your project, where like half the community wanted it and the other half thought that you were, I don't know, the second coming of the Moolah guy, whatever his name was.
Yeah. So it's always interesting to sort of look back on this stuff many years, because it's many years down the line now. And it was, I mean, the pushback was really silly. The pushback boiled down to somebody, I don't know who, set up, with like a little anonymous Reddit account and posted in a bunch of subreddits about how I'm a giant scammer because people haven't received their open rigs delivery. And so I went and, as part of my response, I posted hundreds and hundreds of tracking numbers to show successful deliveries. And people posted in those threads saying, well, no, I have received mine. So it became, and it was at a frustrating time for some OpenRigs customers because they'd chosen a a delivery method that was really slow. They'd chosen a sort of land sea based delivery system instead of normal air shipping because air freight was expensive,
Right.
and the land sea stuff was super slow. It was like 3 months,
Which that's a
and
ton of
I
mining profit that you're losing if you're not if you
right
don't have it set up.
yeah absolutely and for the most I mean the most interesting thing for me in that as well was that the people that were the most vicious that set up fake accounts to troll and to complain, they were the guys who bought like one rig or two rigs. The guys that bought like 30 rigs, they were just like, oh, it's fine, we'll continue operating out of washing baskets till they arrive. It's
Right.
like
Right. So
you
is
know
that
you're
where you
like
learned how to be the
it's
troll that
the
you
guys
are
that
now?
should be complaining weren't. Yes, I learned how to troll from being trolled. But yeah, VertPay was, I mean, the original idea was like, hey, I mean, like, because I liked Vertcoin. It was one of the few altcoins that I actually thought could do something interesting. Okay, yes, it's based on Bitcoin, but look, at least they're trying something interesting. Let's see where this goes. And the community really impressed me because they had raised a bunch of money for an athlete, and the community seemed interested in building up Vertcoin as a payment mechanism. And so it was like, well, okay, let's set up like a payment gateway called VertPay, and let's raise some funds to take this to the next level, because we'd done a bunch of development on the sort of underlying stuff anyway.
Right.
And yeah, then there was this post. Well, I mean, initially everything was exciting, but then there was this post, and then there was like a whole bunch of people like, oh, this smells like a scam. And like, honestly, at that point in time, it was like, well, okay, no problem. We'll just scrap this idea, and we'll just like carry on without it. We don't need to raise funds,
Right.
and to carry on working. And in fact, if we do want to raise funds, we can go raise VC. And so it ended up causing a bit of a rift in the company, because there were some people who felt that we did need to raise funds, and that again, this is sort of pre-ICO days.
Yeah.
They felt that raising funds from a cryptocurrency community was like a really clever idea, which I guess in the world of ICOs is.
If that's your thing.
Yeah, if that's a thing, I mean, I'm kind of glad on the flip side that it did end up causing a rift, and that I ended up not being involved in what effectively could have been like an ICO. We also at the same time, like there were a bunch of Bitcoin stock exchanges that closed up shop, or one in particular, Bitcoin and Litecoin stock exchange. So that also like it killed the opportunity to raise funds on there
Yeah.
through normal sort of IPO style fundraiser. And it was like, okay, well, basically like, so much for permissionless innovation.
Right.
And let's sort of like go back to the beginning, and I will just fund this. And I will bootstrap it. And when we are at a point where we can actually, it means that we're going to be working slower than we might have expected to. And when we're at a point where we are ready to like start raising funds, we'll do so through conventional VC means, and not by doing any fundraising from cryptocurrency communities, which is what we've done.
Yeah, no, I think I can understand that whole transition, and I feel like it probably kept you a little more sane that way too. Of course, right about that time is when you tripped and stumbled on Bitmonero, right?
Yeah, which was, in fact, it was literally at that time. I mean, like, as I was walking away from that, and the whole thing was like imploding, that was probably Feb March, 2014, and it was like, okay, so now this is now we've got like half the company going off to do their own thing, which of course never happened, and they've all carried on doing other stuff, and none of them have pursued any sort of stuff in the space at all.
Sure.
And then the handful of us that were left are like, okay, well, let's carry on with what we originally intended to, but let's just do it slower and with less people. And so that's sort of like we started down that road, And as we started down that road, I stumbled across Bitmonero, because a friend of mine was like, "Oh, well, I mean, like just before Bitmonero, he was like, have you heard of this Bitcoin thing?" And I'm like, "Yes, Bitcoin's just some stupid scam. What are we talking about?" And he's like, no, there's
The
another
other
Bitcoin." And
Bitcoin, yeah.
I'm like, "No, there isn't. No, what nonsense are you talking? There's no other Bitcoin." And anyway, then of course there was the whole, the amazing discovery of the other boy, the accidental discovery of the other Bitcoin.
Yeah, it turns
I
out it
was
was
just
also a
browsing the
scam, right?
web. Yeah, right. It's like, oh, I was just browsing the web and I found this Bitcoin thing and I'm so confused. What do you guys think? Dot, dot, dot. So yeah, I mean that sort of like one thing led to another, and next minute I'm mining Bitmonero and hoping that it'll hit, hoping it'll hit Cryptsy, you know, because if it hits Cryptsy, like, oh wow, I'm gonna be able to dump my mine Monero for like Bitmonero rather, for like fortunes. I'm gonna be like a altcoin millionaire overnight.
So we don't need to necessarily talk about, you know, then how you ended up getting involved in the development of things. You've talked about that a lot. Maybe sometime down the road we can revisit that. But, you know, at what point did you then, as you had gotten involved in Monero, did you say, you know, we need to start coming up with things in this space? And so I believe your first thing was MyMonero. Is that right? Is that your first kind of Monero project?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you mean outside of the sort of core Monero stuff that I was doing? Yeah, I mean, like even before then, the one of the earliest things I did was, at the time, PayV was still called VertPay. VertPay slash please change the name because it has nothing to do with Vertcoin anymore. And one of the things that I decided, I mean, I don't know, this was probably like July, August 2014. I was like, honestly, instead of like making the settlement options as wide as we're making them, what if we just made the settlement options Bitcoin and Monero and fiat? And that was sort of a very early, you know, I mean, by that time I'd already decided that Monero was not actually destined to be a gigantic scam, and that it was probably more interesting to just see where it goes. And so I'd started to sort of want to do things with Monero, and that was one of the first. After that, yeah, there was my Monero, the web wallet, which is, you know, though, I mean, that's a whole discussion in and of itself. And sort of subsequent to that, I don't know, I mean, oh, there's Monero Dice.
How's Monero Dice doing?
Fine. Monero Dice is actually really interesting because I basically ignore it. I'm really bad with that. But
It
it's just
seems
that
like
we're
the whole
so busy.
subreddit ignores it too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, it's like Stefan and I are really busy at the moment, and so we don't pay as much attention to it as we should. But we do have some interesting plans on the cards. And what is nice is, I mean, when I say ignore it, I don't mean like we literally ignore it. I mean, you know, we have a bunch of alerts with, like, if anything happens, and
But
we check it pretty much daily.
it sort of just manages itself, I would imagine.
Yeah, it does. And the nice thing is that it's been fairly stable. I mean, we've had one security issue, and thank goodness we process withdrawals manually, because it allowed us to just like prevent any withdrawal from actually taking place, to fix the security issue, and to basically like roll back the affected stuff. And that was like, you know, I'm just like really grateful that it didn't become worse than that, because it could have been, I mean, with like, I mean, there's always a risk that I'm going to like myself or Stefan or anyone that I work with, we're going to mess up and we're going to end up with like, getting hacked or getting scammed or getting whatever. I mean, it's probably going to happen at some point, but at least up until this point, we've been fairly okay. And I think if we can do it, given that we're not exactly like the world's foremost experts on this stuff, I think it means that a lot of people can as well, as long as they just apply some basic like logic and some obvious countermeasures, and figure out what their risks are and figure out what their security model is.
Is there any kind of like insurance that you can get to, I don't know, help mitigate some of the problems that, you know, if you were to get hacked, or I mean, maybe there's not, but.
There probably is. I mean, our exposure in the hot wallet, for example, is like really small. And even on a like Dice is, Monero Dice is really interesting because we have a bunch of stuff running that analyzes Monero Dice over time. One of the Monero Research Lab guys put it together for us, or put together the paper for us, and then we turned that into like an actual piece of code that allows us to monitor the betting patterns over time. And so hopefully, unless somebody finds some sort of hack and does like a really slow bleed, like an extremely slow bleed, we'll pick it up. If they do even like a mediocre slow bleed, then it'll be like, well, this is weird. It's not quite what we expected. And so we'd be able to pick much of that up. At the same time, like if we did need to go and get insurance, or if we wanted to get insurance, we'd literally just get insurance on the hot wallet, because that's the main thing that's at risk.
Okay. Cool. All right, well, yeah, we can I don't know, maybe in the future we can have a whole nother discussion about my Monero and your plans there. I know I told you I promised that this would be somewhere in the ballpark of a half hour, and I think we're getting close to that. So maybe we can just finish with one last kind of big question. Since you clearly have experience doing these various startups, and I don't know, maybe none of them have turned much of a profit yet, but they seem like they might have prospects of that in the future. Do you have any like advice to somebody who might be listening if they wanted to start up a Bitcoin or a Monero or, you know, whatever, Ethereum or whatever company? What would you kind of give them as your first, I don't know, unsolicited advice?
So, well, I mean, like, it obviously helps if you've got money to bleed. At the same time, I looking at all these companies doing ICOs, companies, coins, whatever, I can't imagine that they're going to have lots of longevity. It's extremely hard to really have to build up a company that has passion in what you're doing when you've like almost stumbled across millions of dollars because you did an ICO. I mean, like you haven't really got skin in the game. You've done some mock-ups, and you've done some screenshots. Congratulations. And I think that we're going to see a lot of I think we're going to see a lot of failures. I think we're very much in like in that as well. We're in a sort of a dot-com bubble type of environment where stupid money is getting thrown at projects because people are suddenly rich from their altcoin or Bitcoin investments, and they capitalize on it by throwing money at very stupid, ill-conceived projects. And we're going to see those things bottom out. We're going to see them collapse, and the projects that will survive, that will last, and that will become successful, are the ones that maybe don't start off with a big bang. The ones that maybe start off in someone's garage, virtually or physically or literally, and that are built up over time through, like being hacked away on weekends. The stuff that spins out of hackathons and is, like just slowly and carefully and carefully worked on by a handful of people. And I have a lot of I have a lot of hope that those are the projects that will succeed, and a lot of trust that they will succeed. Rather than the projects that are just like, well, let's throw stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
I mean, I think that kind of is true even just outside of this space. You know, if you want to start a company, it really has to be a labor of love, and oftentimes you're working another job on the side and you're doing this at night, and you know, maybe if you're lucky 5 years from now you're turning a profit, and you know, maybe looking at either expanding the company or selling it or whatever else. So yeah, makes sense.
And passion and love plays a much bigger role in that, even from a VC perspective. I mean, I've been involved in not only investing in companies myself, but also in helping other investors analyze the risk of investing in a company. And honestly, that's one of the biggest factors. It's like, are these people really passionate about what they want to achieve? Sometimes that's even more important than like, do they have this magically solid go-to-market strategy? Because a lot of that stuff can sometimes just be developed over time.
Right. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, thanks for your thoughts on that and sharing a little bit about some of the things you've done. I don't want to keep you any longer just because I made you that promise that we'd keep it fairly short. But thanks for being the, what was it that you said, the pony, the guinea pony?
The guinea
So
party. There we go.
yeah, thanks for helping me kick off the show. Maybe we can have you back on sometime to talk about My Monero, maybe another one where we can talk about your 2023 exit scam. I know I want to
Oh
get in
yeah.
on the ground floor of that one to make sure I can make the most money.
I'm sure Bitfinex are going to be, providing some sort of token that you can trade on the exit scam.
Yeah, you can bet on
Short
when
exit
it's gonna
scam.
happen and
Yeah, the exact day. In 2023, nobody knows. It's a surprise.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, thanks for that. And have a good rest of your day. I know it's getting towards the later end of your day out in are you in South Africa now or are you still traveling around
I
Europe?
am.
Okay.
No, I got back a couple of days ago, so I'm back
Okay.
on South African standard time.
Yeah, well, welcome home then.
Thank you.
And yeah, that wraps up just about everything for today. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, if you like trolling, then you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Fluffy Pony ZA, or if you're American, I'm at Fluffy Pony ZA. And other than that, I don't know, Reddit, IRC, all the usual jazz, whatever, all the usual outlets.
Sure, great. Okay. And you can follow me on Twitter at Monero Monitor. You can also check out our site, MoneroMonitor.com, or you can get me on Reddit at Big Red Machine, and that's red with two D's like Reddit. So until next time, so long, everybody. Thanks for listening to today's show. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider donating on our website, MoneroMonitor.com. The Monero Monitor podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons share-alike license. Specific terms of this license can be found on our website. Music featured in the show is by Justin Maher and used under a Creative Commons license.